Hello, you're listening to Gaze Gaze, in which we're gay and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies, and sometimes we talk about other stuff. My name's Erin, and don't speak to me or I shall kill you.
And my name is Erin, and sherry in a lady's chamber? I could never agree to it, but a bit of honest brandy.
Hi, I'm Katie, and the overexposure of women to literature breeds unnatural fancies.
It's Katie Hoops. Katie Hoops, our friend and previous podcaster. Hoops was on our Are You the One episode, and that was so much fun.
One of my personal favorites, honestly.
Yeah, same.
Yes, the content, 10 out of 10. Can't wait for this new Nick Lachey.
I was just going to talk. Yeah, we have to do that one together. Wait,
it's so exciting.
Can I read the synopsis of that one?
Yes.
Netflix is making a new reality TV series called The Ultimatum. I think the first season's already out. But basically, yeah. They put six couples, and the couples are like kind of on the fence about breaking up. And then they temporarily break all of them up to date other people, I think, in the other couples.
Oh.
And then the end of the series, they get to decide whether or not they want to get back with their original partner or get with their new partner.
I thought it was they either get married or break up.
No, they temporarily break up and then they have to date other people.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were dating the other contestants.
I thought they might not be whoever they wanted,
but it's so much more like juicy if they have to date the other contestants. Like, what if the outcome is just like everybody's like, yeah, that's the person that I want to marry. Everybody chooses the same person.
Oh my God. Are You the One?
Oh yeah, yep. It would be.
And the show was made by the same people who did Love is Blind. The first season was just heterosexual couples, but they've said that the second season will be mostly women and non-binary people. I'm very interested to see how it works and if it ends up being like an all sapphic season.
That would be so good.
Yeah, I hope it's good.
For me.
Yeah, for me too.
I know, we've been itching for that good reality TV, so Hoops, please come back for
God.
That one.
Yeah.
Well,
every
day.
You're
going to come for Killing Eve, right?
Yeah.
Yay!
I do, but also...
I got spoiled on the finale.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you guys are keeping up.
No, I have not been watching it,
I haven't watched any yet.
I have heard that the plan from everybody on Twitter is to kill the showrunner. So,
yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, basically, a lot of calls for violence.
Some decisions were made.
Is it the same showrunner as last season, or did they pick out another one again?
No, it's different.
It's another person again. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard this.
Why do they keep doing that?
Altogether is kind of a mess, but I'm still going to watch to the end because
Because
I like to suffer.
I have heard that it differs from the books quite a lot, though all of the seasons differ from the books, but I guess the books had like a very different ending in a way that other seasons have not deviated quite so much.
I was going to say, Erin, I know exactly what you're talking about, and we are stepping around it because we have to.
Yeah.
But we'll talk all about it on the episode.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But that's not what we're here for today. Today we're not doing reality TV. We're not doing Killing Eve. We haven't even introduced what we're talking about, which is the BBC miniseries for the Sarah Waters novel Fingersmith, which also inspired the Korean film The Handmaiden.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was more of a mouthful than I thought it would be.
No, that's fine. I was thinking a lot about The Handmaiden while watching this.
Me too. I thought it was impossible to not think about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely, refamiliarized myself because I was like, what are the exact differences? But there was a lot I had forgotten about The Handmaiden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made me really want to rewatch it, but oops, I didn't.
No, me neither.
That's okay. I almost re-listened to that episode, and then I just didn't get a chance to.
God, we've all been a mess.
I know.
It's a messy time of year. And by that, I mean it's just a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we start, I would like to give some content warnings. As with The Handmaiden, The Fingersmith does have some graphic depictions of sexual abuse, of institutionalization, and unlike The Handmaiden, the death penalty and hangings. I think that The Handmaiden ended up swapping ideas for suicide, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. This is part of the stuff that I wanted
okay,
to talk
we'll
about.
Okay, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Yes. Continue.
The miniseries, it was a 3-part television special that was made for the BBC, and there were a couple of other Sarah Waters miniseries that were made around the same time. This aired in 2005. I know that Tipping the Velvet also got a similar miniseries, and it was directed by Aisling Walsh.
Who is that? Do we know?
No, we don't know.
Okay.
Aisling Walsh has made... ironically enough, is best known for making the film Maudie, about a woman named Maud who's an artist, and the actress who plays Sue plays the lead in
that film. Yeah, Sally
Hawkins,
who's great. Sally Hawkins. I liked her in this a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was doing the work with her facial expressions.
Yeah, I thought that she's a very good actress, honestly.
Oh, she is? I think she has, like, an Oscar, if not more than one.
Yes,
I believe she won for Shape of Water, right?
Yep, you're correct. Yep, she played the lead in The Shape of Water, which I have not seen, but after watching Fingersmith, I was like, God, I've really got to watch that. Like,
it's great, and it's like, you know, it's Guillermo del Toro, it's like a monster love story, so there's lots to grab onto from like a queer perspective, from a like immigrant and perspective. He's always pretty good at that.
Oh my gosh, and I thought, I was like, oh my god, she looks so familiar. What is she from? And then I was like, oh my god, of course it's Shape of Water. Also, her hair is so beautiful. Like, holy shit.
It was so long.
I know. Anyway, Sally Hawkins plays Sue Trinder, who is a pickpocket who's living in London during the Victorian era. Sue was an orphan who was raised by a woman named Mrs. Suxby, who taught her to steal when she was a young girl and raised her up to pickpocket folks to make it by. Mrs. Suxby associates with many other thieves, including this young man who's named Richard Rivers, who is known simply as Gentleman because he presents himself really well and he commits a lot of high-dollar crime. One day, Rivers proposes a plan to Sue. He knows of a young woman named Maud whose uncle keeps her locked away in his mansion. Maud has a big inheritance, which is £10,000, equivalent to about £1 million a day.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Rivers says that Maud is this simple woman who's not very worldly because she's been locked away her whole life, and he wants to trick her to fall in love with him so that he can propose to her, steal her inheritance, and drop her off at a mental institution after they've been married. To do this, he wants Sue to serve as Maud's handmaiden, taking care of her while also talking her into accepting Rivers' proposal and pushing her to fall in love with him. Sue accepts the plan on the condition that he will pay her £3,000 at the end of the deal. When Sue arrives at the mansion, she finds that Maud is not simple at all, as Rivers thought that she was. Maud is a very bright girl. She is polite and she's very kind to Sue. Like Sue, she was orphaned at a young age when her mother was hanged, and she was placed in a mental institution until her abusive uncle pulled her out so that he could force her to be his assistant curating his library, which is full of rare pornographic art that he frequently shows to his friends. Though she's never left the mansion, Maud has read many books, and she knows a lot. Sue and Maud form an instant friendship. Maud still suffers from recurrent nightmares about her time in the institution, and though she takes medication, she asks Sue to sleep with her each night so that she can feel safe. Over the next few months, Rivers tries to woo Maud. Sue pushes Maud to accept Rivers, but she realizes that she has started to develop feelings for Maud too. Though Sue feels guilty about it, Maud accepts Rivers' proposal. The night before their wedding, Maud asks Sue what a married couple does on their wedding night. Sue teaches by example, and the two have very passionate sex. But Maud goes on to marry Rivers, and as Sue, Maud, and Rivers are in the carriage to the mental institution, they take Sue instead, with Maud claiming that Sue is the one who is the real Lady Maud Rivers. Maud feels guilt for sacrificing Sue just for her own freedom, and meanwhile, Sue languishes in the institution. Rivers takes Maude to Mrs. Suxby's house. Mrs. Suxby reveals that she orchestrated this whole plan, not Rivers, because both Maude and Sue have the same 10,000 pound inheritance and she plans to cash both of them in. Rivers was just a part of her plan. And truth is, the woman that Maude believed was her mother, who was hanged, was actually Sue's mother. Mrs. Suxby had sheltered Sue's mother when she was pregnant and she promised to care for her baby after she was hanged. Before she died, Sue's mother wrote a note that her inheritance was to be divided equally between Sue and Mrs. Suxby's daughter, Maude. Turns out that when the officials came to take the woman's baby away, Sue, Mrs. Suxby gave up her own daughter and kept the woman's daughter, raising her as a normal pickpocket as she wished. Meanwhile, a staff member from Maude's mansion is trying to find Rivers, and he comes to the mental institution in an attempt to find him, not realizing where he's going at all. Sue meets with him there and instructs him to bring her the materials so that she can file a key so that she can escape. Her plan works and he helps her to escape. She takes him to Mrs. Suxby's house because she wants to see Mrs. Suxby again, and she also expects that Rivers will appear there sooner or later. And not only does this guy want to meet Rivers, but obviously she wants to confront him too for dropping her off at the mental institution. When she arrives at Mrs. Suxby's house, she is surprised to see that Maude is there. Rivers comes back. Mrs. Suxby says that she wants to end their whole plan because she realized that it was wrong to throw Sue and Maude aside just for her own wealth. Rivers tries to attack them. There's a big confrontation and Maude ends up stabbing him in the stomach and he dies. When the police arrive, Mrs. Suxby admits to the crime. She is the one who's imprisoned, and both Sue and Maude meet with her. Now she just wants to do what she can to protect the two girls, and ultimately she is hanged for Rivers' murder. Maude's awful uncle died or was hospitalized or something off screen. He had a stroke. Did either of you guys catch what happened?
Yeah, he had a stroke. So he dies.
Yeah, I knew he had a stroke, but I was like, did he go to the hospital? Like,
I think it's kind of implied that it was a while ago. And then, and then it was like, maybe he died. Who cares?
Yeah, they keep talking about like, what happened after the incident.
Yeah. I like that it was, I think it was also implied that he had a stroke after he saw what Maude had done to his books, which was tear them up.
Yep. She did. That was a very minor scene. It was a very cool scene, very minor scene compared to the scene that is depicted in The Handmaiden.
Yeah.
One more thing on my list of things to talk about.
I know. I want to talk about that too. Yeah.
But anyway, so he had a stroke off screen. Nobody cares. And now he's dead. And Maude ends up returning to his mansion. Sue shows up at the mansion to meet with Maude. Maude assumes that Sue has come there to kill her or hurt her for betraying her. And Maude confesses to Sue that her uncle was abusive throughout her childhood and forced her to read pornography to him and his friends. Sue, meanwhile, admits that she found the letter from her mother regarding the inheritance. She knows the truth about being swapped at birth, and she knows that Maude was just yet another victim of Mrs. Suxby and River's plan, that Maude was not intentionally trying to sabotage Sue, but that she had also been misled. The two women reconcile after this realization, like accepting each other's trauma, realizing they both got duped, and then they admit that they're in love with one another, and they share a very tender kiss while sitting on the library floor. And that is where the series ends.
Don't forget the part where Maude is now making a career of writing pornography. And then she's like, these pages say what I want to do to you. Good for her.
Good for her.
Yeah. Erin, I have a teeny tiny correction.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Maude's mother, or who she believed to be her mother, Mrs. Lily or whatever, she died in a mental institution. She was not hanged.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then and who so was that's hanged? Why
Mrs. Suxby told Susan that her mom was hanged.
Yes.
But that was just a story.
Oh. Yes.
And okay. So
yeah. Man, I got duped by Mrs. Suxby too.
Yeah, huh? You did. But it's like very significant in the books because when we get like Maude's internal monologue, she's terrified she's also going to go insane, basically, because that's what she believed happened to her mom. Mm-hmm. And so she's always talking about her like bad blood is like rising and all this stuff. So I think that is the parallel that they made in The Handmaiden, where I should have written down their names in The Handmaiden. It's Hideko and...
Hideko and Suki.
Suki, yes. Mm. Which is cute because they call Sue Suki in Fingersmith too. Not in the show, but in the book. That's her nickname. Yeah. But
that is cute.
So her whole thing is like she keeps like threatening to hang herself, and it's because her mother, I think they do say her like mom went insane and hung herself, right? But I think that's the parallel we're supposed to draw.
Whose mom?
So Maud and Hideko.
Hideko, yeah, Hideko's mom was like in The Handmaiden, if I recall correctly, she always believed that her mom died by suicide, but come to find out the uncle actually murdered her and framed it as a suicide. Yeah.
Yes, because he like took her to the basement or whatever when she...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess you didn't really touch on that in the summary, but yeah, the whole thing is Maud's uncle is a creep and he makes her read essentially like erotic literature out loud to like men.
Yeah.
And he keeps like a library of it.
I will say that section of the plot in the miniseries seemed more minor and like less focus was on it than in The Handmaiden, where he's very, very openly creepy. He's constantly looming. He's always around.
Yeah.
And at like, you also get the extended death scene for him with like the cyanide cigarettes and all of that shit. And
yeah, the mercury cigarette.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. I think like the one thing that the miniseries does do is they kind of sacrifice like Maud's perspective, because in the novel it's a lot of overlapping plot, because we get all of Sue's story and then we swap and we get Maud's perspective on everything basically. But I think they just didn't really want to rehash, and it was a really short miniseries, so
yeah.
But I think we lose some
for the books too. I'd imagine like you get her inner monologue a lot, which you can't really do in a series like this.
Yeah, which I think like is unfortunate. It's easier to just kind of think that Maud is more guilty than she really is if you're not getting her guilty monologue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder what it's like watching this and like not knowing the twist of the betrayal of Maud to Sue, because like in The Handmaiden it's like, oh my god, she's going into the insane asylum instead of the other girl.
Yeah.
And in this one, you know, I knew it was coming. But then actually the mom twist with Mrs. Suxby, that one actually like got me, and I'm like, I'm on board.
Man, that character, Mrs. Suxby's equivalent character in The Handmaiden, has no substance. Like, she's there in just the opening scene and then she doesn't come back.
Yeah. And I really think that Mr. River's equivalent in The Handmaiden is like really like toned down.
Agreed. Rivers has such a big role here.
He was so insidious, like a lot more than I expected. Yes. Like, he was creepy and I have to tell you guys that the actor does star in The Boy, so he's not The Boy, really? But he's in The Boy. Yes.
I want to watch The Boy so bad, but nobody will watch The Boy with me. Nobody will watch it with me because they've all seen it and they don't want to watch it again.
Wait, who is The Boy?
Watch it with me.
Oh, The Boy is a horror movie.
Oh, it's a horror movie.
It's about a woman who's hired to babysit a doll, and they think, like, this is completely off topic. Anyways, everybody watch The Boy.
Yeah, I've heard it's very good and very fun. And it has like a fun twist.
Yeah. He's also in Bridgerton, if you guys watch Bridgerton.
No.
I haven't.
He's the dad.
Speaking of other things that I thought was funny about the casting here, like Sally Hawkins, obviously best known for Shape of Water, did both the Fingersmith and the Tipping the Velvet series. I did not realize that she was in Godzilla King of Monsters. And so was the uncle, Charles Dance, the guy who plays the uncle.
Yeah, he's like a character actor that's in a ton of shit.
Yeah, both of them were in the Godzilla movie.
Wait, who does she play in Godzilla?
She has to play like the mom, I think.
Yeah.
No, the mom is a blonde lady. I can't. This is terrible. I can't remember anything. Ladies,
who,
I don't know.
Who even cares in that movie, though? Like,
the Godzilla movie was the worst movie I saw that year when it came out. I stand by that.
King of Monsters?
Wait.
The monsters are the best.
Godzilla King of Monsters? Hold on. I'm leaving this. Yeah. I'm leaving forever. Goodbye. I can't.
That was the worst movie of 2018.
It had too many people in it.
What are you talking about?
The whole...
It had, like, this whole subplot about this guy who was friends with Godzilla and his daughter, and then he ran away, and the daughter ran away, and then Godzilla has to save the daughter.
And...
Yeah, I don't care. I want Godzilla's big, meaty foot to just stomp on everybody, and then Godzilla to run off with Mothra.
Well, yeah, I do want that to happen.
And them to kiss.
Erin, I agree with you, but also I would like to highlight that they cast so many women of color in that movie, and every single time any of them gave a piece of advice to the main lead character, he would be like, I think you're wrong, and then he would blatantly disobey their advice, and he would be the right one, and then it would be like, see that lady, she was so wrong, I was right. And just watching this, like, a character like that, just like
not my experience watching this movie. Either of you. Because he's like completely separate than like 90% of the other characters. Because they're all vibing.
I don't remember this movie well enough. I just remember being like, I don't care about this guy. And also, I don't know who he is.
Sally Hawkins plays, she was in the 2014 Godzilla movie, and she was a returning character, and she died.
Yeah, I saw that. I honestly do not remember her in the movie, so.
I also don't remember Charles Dance, the uncle, in the movie. I did not remember either of them. The one other thing that I will share is that the woman who plays Maud, Elaine Cassidy, she has mostly done a lot of like made-for-TV films and some feature films, but she starred in A Discovery of Witches, which to my knowledge is the only TV series about witches that features lesbian characters.
First of all, did I not just tell you that the Magicians had some lesbians in the last three episodes?
Okay, I forgot about that. Okay. And there's also lesbian witches in the, actually, I mean, there's lesbian witches in the Vampire Diaries too, but they do die brutally in a car accident that erupts into flames and sends them.
It makes no sense
100
to have a series about witches and not have a lot of lesbians. Am I wrong?
You're so
You're
right.
You're not wrong. And you should say it.
Oh my god. When was the last time we got a solid TV show with like a lesbian main character?
This is like even unrelated to our tangent, but, and I think I already said this in the witches episode that we did. In Sabrina the Teenage Witch, like her two aunts, they look nothing alike. I assumed that they weren't sisters, that they were married. And it,
oh,
that's,
I
like
wish.
Something that I always think
they
about.
Should have been.
Like,
that should have been the change
they
that
just
they
been
made.
Married. She has two aunts because they're gay.
Speaking of,
so
also in Practical Magic, the two aunts also wish. I always just imagined they were gay together. They're not related.
Okay. Hoops. That Practical Magic has an entire coming out scene where they have to call all of their witch friends and be like, "She's coming out of the broom closet."
Yeah, like, exactly. Literally. Also, I do love that movie.
Oh, that movie's so good.
It's so good. Okay. Yeah. Practical Magic, but there's lesbians now.
Yeah,
everyone's
agreed.
Lesbian.
I mean,
everyone's gay.
Hooray.
They kill the man still. They kill a man.
Okay.
But then they fall in love with women after.
Yes.
What do you think? Okay.
It can be a fun first date activity to kill a man.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And then bury him in the backyard.
Yeah.
And then hide from the sexy cop. Who keeps coming around?
That man, like, I always had this image of him in my mind. And then when I rewatched that movie as an adult, I was like, this is just the most normal looking man.
I know. He's not sexy. But he's Sandra Bullock is like, he's so hot.
He's so hot. He has different color eyes. Oh my god.
Well, that is fun.
Can you imagine if, like, you were like, oh, I dreamed you. And then it's like, fucking normal ass guy shows up. No.
And he's a cop.
And he's a cop.
I'm like, damn, thought it was a dream, but it turned out to be a nightmare.
Yeah, pretty much. Anyways, I guess we should talk about this.
We are so off topic. What were we even talking about?
Hold on. I have one more point. Character, the actresses and characters, they've been in other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Suxby. Who recognized Mrs. Suxby?
Yes, she's Professor Umbridge.
Yes, she's Professor Umbridge in Harry Potter.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
These are all, like, actors that I think are pretty big in like British stuff like this, like BBC dramas, but we just don't get enough exposure. I didn't realize that Sally Hawkins was also in Tipping the Velvet.
Yes.
Man.
Mm-hmm. Which I have not watched that many series either, but I've read the book.
Well, put it on your to watch list.
So watch.
Is she queer?
No,
I don't think so.
Okay. Sally, from what I was reading about Sally Hawkins, she lives a very private life. She's never openly talked about having any partners and has never openly talked about her sexuality in any regard. So who knows?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure did a whole lot of lesbian themed miniseries though in the early 2000s.
I guess it should be noted that the author too is queer, and the author of the book, Sarah Waters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Having watched The Handmaiden first, watching Fingersmith at first was like, well, man, they sure don't get a whole lot of like interaction aside from the first episode of this miniseries where it's like they're hanging out and then they're separated for all of episodes 2 and 3 compared to The Handmaiden where they are like scheming and plotting together the whole time.
Yeah.
I think that it makes a lot of sense to me that that's something that was changed because I think that this like follows a very, in my mind, stereotypical path for a Victorian era romance novel to end with them like reconciling and getting together. I feel like that's something that I've seen in like straight Victorian era romance novels that I've read because I still, unfortunately, to this day have not read a lesbian one.
Well, it's time to read Fingersmith.
I should read Fingersmith. I should read Tipping the Velvet, honestly, because now I know the Fingersmith plot so well.
Yeah, but I would say I prefer Fingersmith, and I think the novel, like, is so much more dense in terms of, like, establishing their relationship. Tipping the Velvet is interesting. Obviously, we have lesbians. We love it. There's a lot of, like, gender stuff, but the ending is very bittersweet compared to this one where you're kind of like, okay, they're, like, they've come back together. But Aaron, yeah, we were like briefly talking about this, and this is really what I was thinking about. So in The Handmaiden, and when I first saw it, I was kind of like not really happy about it, but they make these decisions, right, that it's not Hideko that destroys her uncle's books. It's Suki, right? And it's not Suki who gets herself out of the asylum. It's she's helped from the outside by Hideko, which I think is, I like it on its own. But what I prefer about Fingersmith is you kind of establish this autonomy that the women have. Like, I prefer Maud destroying her uncle's books, although that scene could have been longer. And I prefer, like, Sue kind of working her way out of the asylum, even though, actually, this, I thought this stuff in the show, like, the asylum stuff was brutal. Like, I remember it being really, really rough in the book, but I was like, they just kept showing stuff. There's, like, water torture. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she gets, like, sexually assaulted, too.
That part was weird.
That part was weird.
I was just like, what exactly is going on?
I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah, I think, to your point, it's funny, because I was thinking about this a lot, too. Like, I like that Maud destroys the books in this movie and that Sue gets out by herself and with her own wits and kind of by like duping this guy. But I like that for this movie. And then for The Handmaiden, I actually really like the changes they made. I think that
For sure.
I really like the scene where they Suki starts destroying everything and then Hideko like joins in with her. And I don't know. I think the changes like make sense for like both stories.
Yeah, and this is, like, ultimately their relationship is different in both series.
It's true, yeah.
And I think that, they both have different strengths. It's definitely interesting thinking back on, like, how much is emphasized about, like, Hideko's, like, uncle and stuff in The Handmaiden versus the show, which did not really. It wasn't even that, like, I feel like it could have been worse. They could have made that scene much worse with her reading.
Yeah, I think some of it was implied too, because then when Maud gets to Mrs. Suxby, she's like, he didn't touch you, did he? And then she's like, well, better that your family member does it than a random guy.
I was
like,
okay.
Wait, what?
Oh my gosh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Bad
that
take, so Mrs. Suxby, but I...
yeah.
I don't know if that's, like, more apparent in the novel or if it's still the same kind of level of
No, he doesn't. He subtle. Does not like actually physically do anything to her. It's like more of
and
I think they have like only one line of it in the miniseries where he's like, it's this weird kind of control he's trying to exhibit because he's collecting these books, but it's not really like he's getting off on it. It's like a weird sort of like he's like building this library and he's indexing all this stuff, which is also
for,
different
like, historical purposes.
I don't even know if that it's like he just wants to have this giant collection. And then like in The Handmaiden, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't the men shown to have like erections and stuff?
Okay,
which like makes that a completely different scene than in Fingersmith where she's just reading and it's like there's only three guys there and they're just chilling.
In The Handmaiden, it's like because her uncle is saved by Japanese diplomats after he like rats out the Korean military, he has this like a cultural obsession with Japan, and so he models like their readings after like traditional Japanese historical storytelling where there's like a theater with like 20 people sitting in a room and she's like sitting on a stage reading.
Yeah.
Versus this is like a private showing with two of his friends in his personal library that is just one small room with some candles in it. The stakes feel different. It's still awful. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting.
But it does just as a different vibe.
Yeah. And in the novel, like before seeing this, before seeing The Handmaiden, I always imagined it more like The Handmaiden scene than like the Fingersmith scene. Where it was more of like a performative, like, we're going to have this young girl read. Like, that adds to it.
Yeah. They didn't want to build another set for the miniseries.
Yeah, yeah, basically. I had completely forgotten that she, like, goes to her uncle's friend who, like, publishes.
Yes.
And then he's like, no, you can't be here.
I was surprised, too, because he's like, she was like, you said that you'd, like, help me. Or like at least like be kind to me or show me around if I ever was in London. He's like, I was just saying that shit. Like, you gotta go.
Yeah.
Like, I have a wife and kids. Like, I want nothing to do with you. Men.
Bleeding feet and all.
Wait, in the Handmaiden though too, wasn't there like an acting portion where Hideko was like grabbing herself too and like
immersive storytelling in Bakugo format, right? Sitting on a stage, acting it out, but sitting down and reading, but kind of acting along with it. Yeah.
Yeah, there was more like emphasis than Fingersmith, where it was kind of just like a really flat reading.
Yeah, and it wasn't even, she would read and then he would like explain in detail about it and et cetera, versus like she was tasked with doing all of that in Handmaiden.
My favorite thing about that scene in Fingersmith was, it was so stupid, like the erotica they were reading was like two sentences long and they were like, oh my god, it's so sexy. It's like, wait, what?
And it wasn't like the level of erotica, it was like he touched her bottom.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you want to meet my member? Yes. They did say member.
Remember, you do get to see the picture. She like has to like get up and show everybody the photo, which is like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, this is kind of crude, but it's like the guy, the depiction of the drawing is like this guy has like a dog dick. It's like bright red,
and and the uncle's like, that. Look how red it is.
He needs to get that looked at.
Oh my god. Yeah, anyways, we're glad he's dead. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
But you know, I did not like the octopus stuff in The Handmaiden.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh my god, you're so right.
I was like, that was a step too far for me.
As with the changes with the two girls, like, being dependent on one another to recover from their trauma, or going on their separate paths to establish their independence and then coming back together later on. That's like a big change that was made. Regarding the uncle, I think that I respect both The Handmaiden and the Fingersmith's approach in handling him, because The Handmaiden really goes to be like, the uncle is so evil, so mm-hmm. overtly like creepy and terrible and awful. Like you're waiting for him to die, whatever. And yeah. then when he does, it's like a vindication moment, right? Like finally this guy's gone and now these two girls can get on with their lives. But in The Fingersmith, he's treated more just kind of like a blip on her journey to getting on with the rest of her life. Like he's not given the time of day to have a dramatic death scene. Like it's something yeah. that happens off screen because he doesn't fucking matter in her yeah. story with Sue. I mean,
it's even a minor character tells Susan, not even Maude, that he's like, oh, he died. And she's like, whatever, cool. he was so creepy.
Yeah. yeah. And now we can move on.
yeah. yeah. Give so me a fucking file and a piece of metal. I'm getting out of here.
Now me and my girlfriend can go live in his house.
Like, again, I like this movie and I really like the culmination of them, like, coming together at the end and like choosing to be together after like going on their own journeys. Because Susan goes from like, I am breaking out of this asylum and I am going to go kill Mr. Rivers and also Maude, to like, oh, I see that like my mother figure also loves you, and the guy who I really wanted dead is already dead, so I don't really care about killing you afterwards. That happens like very fast for me, but that's like really my only complaint.
yeah, there's definitely a time skip that we. 5 minutes. yeah, and I think like part yeah. of it is you're supposed to. Did you say this in the synopsis? It's actually Maude who stabs Mr. Rivers. And
yes.
yeah.
Yeah.
Mrs. Suxby she's just taking the blame, right? So yeah. I think, and then it's also in that moment, like, Maude is almost defending Sue, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? Actually, so I think it's kind of like you're supposed to kind of connect things, but yeah, I thought they didn't necessarily do a good job in like wrapping everything up. And I was like rereading certain scenes from the book, and this is something that I thought was like kind of funny, but in the book, the whole thing is Sue is in the asylum, but everyone thinks it's Maude, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is Sue is unable to prove that she is herself because there's this whole thing about Sue cannot read or write. And so they're asking mm-hmm. her to write her name as Maude so she can escape, but she's unable to.
Yeah.
But so after Mr. Rivers dies and they're like kind of wrapping everything up, basically the doctor from the asylum comes to meet the real Maude. And the whole thing is like, he's like, oh, fuck. Hold on. This is not the same woman that I was torturing in the asylum. Like, and there's just a lot of like details that they kind of wrap up cleaner in the book. Yeah. And then otherwise you're kind of just wondering, like, is she able to just go to her home even though everyone thought she was at the asylum?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
yeah.
I was really moved by the ending where upon seeing Susan again, Mrs. Suxby is like immediately like, I do not want this girl to know that I betrayed her. And also B, I am going to take the fall for murder, like in order to protect her and also my biological daughter, because I actually do love both of these like women, like they are my children. And I also really liked the twist that it was like, even though Susan was the child that Mrs. Suxby raised, her actual biological child was Maude. But I will say, I can't imagine raising a child and then being like, I will now trade that child for my biological child. Oh. And
like, it's worse in the book because the whole thing is like they purposely like don't teach her to read. They like always talking about how dull she is, like intelligence wise, and like how they basically kind of tried to keep her that way. Yeah. And then you're like, oh shit.
Yeah. When Mrs. Suxby told the story of like the cops came to my door, or the folks from the mental institution came to my door, and I just handed them the baby that was in my arms, which was my own baby Maude. I was like, no, I thought she was lying. I thought the Maude was going to call her out on it, because I yeah. was like, there's no way that somebody would give away their biological child.
Yeah, like, especially when you have like a bunch of like babies lying around.
I hate to say it, but yeah, she had like she had like 10 babies at any time because she was the woman who was taking care of all of the abandoned babies in their neighborhood in London. I don't get it. I truly didn't get it.
Also, like, you're with a woman who is like, I am scared to death of the place where I'm going to have to go back to because mm-hmm. it's so horrible. And then you're like, here, take my baby with you.
Yeah, it's weird.
Wait, you're so right. Yeah.
But it could be she's constantly raising these like strangers' babies, so she might actually not have like a connection until Sue is like growing up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I get it.
Yeah, it was sad though. Like I do think that the resolution to me did seem like there was like genuine love that Mrs. Suxby had for Sue. But when Sue has her voiceover of when she goes to see Mrs. Suxby when she like right before she's about to be hanged, she's like, "Oh yeah, Mrs. Suxby was like looking over my shoulder, like she was hoping somebody else would arrive." Like,
yeah, she would always
being,
ask
that being Maud, and it's like, damn, dude.
Yeah. I will say Mrs. in the book, Suxby. I like did not like Mrs. Suxby at all, even in the end.
Yeah.
But in the show, I think that's she's. Fair. And I think it's the actress too who's doing work. But
oh, yeah.
I was just going to say, Imelda Staunton is so good. Like, mm-hmm. she really gives a lot to that character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because ultimately, that lady sucks. But then at the same time, you're like, well, everyone is in a horrible position. They're like so poor in the slums of London. They're taking care of 7 babies.
But she sure does, Mrs. Suxby, if you know what I mean. Also, jumping to this point again off of Mrs. Suxby, I'm so sorry. The reveal of Maud finding out that her mother wasn't actually insane, that it was being put in the asylum against her will that, like, drove her to madness. That was a nice reveal for that character. And I did like how that was then reflected in The Handmaiden, where it was like, oh, your mom didn't actually kill herself. It was murder.
Yeah.
Maybe not as comforting, but
yeah,
of a revelation. But it's still like, yeah. I like the mirror of that.
I don't know. Because, man, that uncle, huh?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know. Like, I don't remember how much they talk about it in Fingersmith, but it is implied that her mom was going through the same thing, basically, where she was under her uncle's control and reading his books. And
yeah.
The same thing where it's like, you can't have any money on your own, and
you have to wear gloves all the time, and I'm gonna hit you with a ruler if you touch my books incorrectly.
Oh my god, can we talk about,
can't open the window.
The gloves though, can we talk about,
what about the gloves?
I just love it. I'm obsessed. Like, the concept of wearing gloves, like, never touching, right? And then suddenly you're with somebody that you want to touch. I don't know. And Sue having the glove in the asylum and just, like, keeping it with her.
Yeah.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Or even in part that disgusting one where, scene. Oh, which one?
I was going to say that gross scene where Mr. Rivers is, like, licking her hand.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, so gross.
And poor Sue is watching in horror when she's like, that bastard, he's not going to kiss her on the lips. He's going to kiss her on the hand.
Yeah. And yeah, she's like, he's going to kiss her somewhere else. And it's like her hand. Oh. Like in the parts I was reading. So I did reread that scene. And I had forgotten this, but Mr. Rivers like realizes that Maud is in love with Sue like way earlier. And so the whole time he's always like, just pretend like you're kissing her instead of me whenever he's doing that kind of stuff, which I think adds another level that you don't really get when they're not saying anything.
Yeah, it's funny because that was like very much in The Handmaiden. And I think it's like he definitely acknowledges it in the Fingerspiss movie, but it's not as I don't think he ever says just like picture you're kissing her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he sees them
having sex.
Yeah. When they're like making out before they're supposed to have their wedding night.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very sad scene.
I know.
Yeah.
I hate too that like they're both of their internal monologues are like, if I just want to tell her that I love her, but she's like plotting to betray me and she doesn't love me, so I can't tell her.
Yeah. And it's like, no.
No.
It's interesting to think like maybe The Handmaiden is that other side of the coin where they.
Oh, yeah.
They do tell know much earlier. Yeah. And so it's kind of like what would happen instead. They can escape together.
Yeah, that is, it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want them to be together.
You just want them to be together?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, guess they get to be. So.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A nice big house.
Yeah. Yeah, I did appreciate like the amount of close shots on hands in this movie. I think that's the sign of a good, some good gay content in my mind.
Yeah. In addition to that, like, just Fingersmith.
Yeah,
like,
I know. It's the same as thing. Tipping the Velvet. It's like these, like, euphemisms.
Yeah.
All
right, anyway.
Oh, I was going to... Okay, so I wanted to ask you guys, when I saw The Handmaiden, I wasn't really sure what to think about the sex scenes.
Mm.
In this version, obviously, they're a lot more just, like, intimate, whereas... Mm-hmm. And you could say that for both series, right? Handmaiden is, like, kind of, like, played a little... Just, like, everything's ramped up. But I just can't get over the bells, right? I don't know. I still don't know what to make about that. The bells, yeah. The scissoring bells from The Handmaiden?
Yeah, the bells.
Yeah.
So I'm shaking my damn head.
And, so I think, like, in Fingersmith, it's just... I prefer this way, this kind of intimacy.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. This seemed like much more like sensual and like tender, but also like there was like an element of like kind of like ravenous desire.
yeah.
Especially for Maud. I thought this was like one of the best sex scenes that we've seen in a movie.
Yeah, agreed.
Oh my god, that hickey on her boob. I was blown away.
The boob. wait, Erin, how could you say that this was one of the best sex scenes when we watched Benedetta?
Okay, that is... Oh, actually, that is interesting. This sex scene had a lot of, like, close-ups and mm-hmm. groping. And that could be, like, a production choice. But it is interesting to contrast that against... The Handmaiden and Benedetta, where there is always, of course, you gotta zoom out so you can see the whole bed, you can see both of the ladies.
Yeah.
You gotta see where the hand is going.
Well, this is
and those were male directors.
Yeah. I think the male director's part, you can tell, but also this is a BBC miniseries, so it was on television.
Oh, that's fair too.
Yeah.
They couldn't take one of the erotica books and sculpt it into a dildo.
Right? Wait, now I'm like, did they show the, I guess it's art, right? I was like, did they show that man's penis in the drawing on the BBC?
Yeah, they did. They totally did.
Oh my god.
But it was art. Maybe that's,
it's like in Danganronpa where to get past the like censorship, they made all the blood pink. So it's like they had to make the dick red.
Yeah, it's just like that, sensors. I think. Yeah, it's identical, actually.
Yes. It's identical, yes, thank you.
The exact same thing, oh my god.
Speaking about the gender divide with the directors and the in the lesbian sex scenes, I even think about Portrait, which is another, like, a sapphic director making mm-hmm. the film who does a lot of the close zoom-in shots, a lot of the, like, tender, like, except for the armpit licking. That one's a little bit out there, but the rest of it.
That's a little specific to the... I think that's the director's fetish, but yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's like, you can just see the intimacy in smaller actions, which I appreciate more than, like, showing two women scissoring, I guess.
Yeah. Another perfect example is Bound, which like literally is just a zoom in that then rotates around in like a dynamic camera shot.
That shot was so fucking good.
That sex scene is so well shot.
Another
by women.
Yeah, so. I would say that's the Wachowskis, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
by the Wachowskis. Yeah,
I still
that one's
have
really
not
good.
Seen, but it's on my list.
Oh my god, let's double feature. Bound and the Boy.
And the Boy.
Oh
okay.
My god.
All right.
Bound and the Boy. Both of them.
Also, this is random, but I didn't know there were lesbians in A Discovery of Witches, so I guess I need to keep.
Yeah.
I've watched like two episodes.
I haven't seen it, but I do know that the one thing I do know is that there are lesbians.
There are lesbians. Okay.
There
well,
are
that's one way to get me to watch something. Do they die? Does anyone die?
I don't know. Honestly, okay. I do not know.
If you know if they die, email us at Erin at GaysGays, and then we'll tell Hoops.
Please.
Or you can send us a DM at GaysGays on Twitter.
I'm just not strong enough right now. I just can't.
Haven't you suffered enough?
I was going to bring this up, of course, but Our Flag Means Death. We love the queer, truly queer content. And then also I've been watching Severance, which also has a gay relationship that I really like. Mm. But then also I watched The Magicians, which has a barrier gaze. So,
oh,
we hate it.
I feel like we should do Our Flag Means Death for the podcast, but I honestly, I don't really want to watch it.
Wait, there's no lesbians in it.
Yeah, there's no lesbians. Really? Not yet. Okay, yeah,
not yet.
There's not.
All right. Well, then I guess
so many
have to.
Gay people, though.
There's so many gay people. If you
I'm on episode 5. So good.
Good. Erin, do you like the original What We Do in the Shadows? Do you like that kind of humor?
It's, I think I prefer the humor in the What We Do in the Shadows TV show, but even that is like not enough to keep me invested. Like I watched half of the first season and then just never finished it.
I know, but man, you keep that begging that me not to spoil for you, but it just gets better. It gets
maybe
so much better.
I'll watch it. Want to see when, because Nandor and Guillermo, they start dating, right? By the end of it, based on all the banner. No, okay, then I don't want to watch it. Let me know when they start dating and then I'll watch it.
We ended on a, you know, something happened. But it's definitely happens. Like, I think they talk about it. They talk about feelings. Like Guillermo's feelings. Mm. It's complicated. Mm. You have to watch it all.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll watch it someday.
You can't just date somebody who's hundreds of years old without having conversations first, right?
I mean, that's true. I just assume that they would have already been having the conversations.
Look, they are. It's complicated.
On that show, she has like canonical girlfriends and like female lovers, right?
Yeah, including I am forgetting the name of the actress, but the girl who is in I've almost said Booksmith, Booksmart.
Yeah, oh, they're not.
That's right. She turns into a vampire in the first season.
I forgot. Yeah, because
and
her name is Beanie Feldstein.
Yes, thank you. And she, gay in real life, has a girlfriend.
I love her.
Oh hell,
she's
yeah.
great. I think
she's funny.
Nadja, like ever. I mean, I wish they need to give her girlfriends.
Maybe I'm just stereotyping her because she's a vampire, and therefore I assume she's bisexual.
I think they are. They all are.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a lot more in the content of like men loving men.
Yeah.
Come on, Taika. I don't think he really has much to do with that show, but still.
Oh yeah, I forgot that he was involved in it, and I forgot that he did Our Flag Means Death too.
Yeah.
What else is he? He did Jojo Rabbit, right?
What is it? Something of the Wilder People. Why can't I remember? That's a really good movie. He did. He's involved in Flight of the Conchords, I believe, too, which I have never watched.
Oh, okay.
I liked it, but I haven't watched it in years, so I don't know how it's kind of like going back to like Always Sunny episodes and being like, oh, this isn't quite what I remembered it being.
At least Always Sunny like leans into that, right?
That's fair. Probably not on the same level, but
speaking about series that it's hard to go back and watch them now with like the same, because the humor has just like aged weirdly. I was talking with my friends here. It was like, I want to go back and rewatch some Homestar Runner. And everybody was like, Erin, you cannot. like Homestar Runner, the humor is just not there anymore. It's over. It's done. Homestar Runner.
It's funny that you should say that, because I would disagree. It's a very specific kind of humor.
It is. It's incredibly specific, but I want to go back and rewatch some. I think it would be fun.
Yeah. Teen Girl Squad?
Homestar Runner. Yes.
Teen Girl Squad.
I think you should watch it.
I have a crush
That's
on
it.
Every
yes.
boy.
Teen Girl Squad.
Yeah.
Okay. I almost had a mental breakdown because I was like, what else did Taika Waititi do? And I almost had a mental breakdown because one of the things that comes up is boy. And so I was like, oh my god, he did The Boy, the movie that we just referenced like twice. And it was like, no, it's a different movie called Boy. So I'm extremely disappointed.
I think if Taika Waititi did The Boy, it would be a very different movie.
Yeah. I was like, if he did The Boy, I want to watch it.
You should just watch The Boy with us.
Yeah.
The Boy.
Oh, okay. This movie is called Hunt for the Wilder People, and it's a great movie. He's like really good with in his like more serious movies because, you know, he's like an indigenous person in New Zealand. And so,
yeah,
you'll get that. Also, Thor Ragnarok, which I don't know why I completely forgot.
Yes. So good.
And did you guys watch Reservation Dogs?
Yeah.
That was good too.
Also so good.
Taika Waititi did Thor Ragnarok?
Yeah, that's why it's so gay.
That's why
it's Thor Ragnarok is gay.
Yes.
Thor?
Thor? Okay, first of all, you're not going to be an Asgardian god without being bisexual, at least.
I mean, yeah, at minimum. That's true. Think about Loki.
Yeah, Loki has his sugar daddy Loki relationship. Yeah!
And Loki is transgender.
Yeah, he is. Oh my god.
Wait, who is Loki's sugar daddy?
Jeff Goldblum's character?
I thought you met Loki in mythology.
Probably is a sugar Loki daddy.
Actually, of the Avengers movies.
Yes, we're talking about Thor Ragnarok.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I was talking
about. I mean, you're both right.
I mean, yes, these are facts for all versions. Yeah,
Loki is transgender. Avengers movie is transgender.
All continuities.
All right. Not what I was talking about. But
okay. Like, multiple times.
In the Avengers movies?
No. Yes.
Oh my god, Aaron, I love you so much.
I like how you're just like not even doubting this for a minute.
Though is the thing.
Well, so in Marvel canon, he does have like, because you know they did the Loki show, so there are like lady.
He has his own show.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus. I haven't watched it.
I did
not know that.
Do they show his horse child?
No. Never ever gonna. Oh. Well, maybe one day.
Yeah.
That show also a little gay between Loki and Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
I've seen some people ship them, but I will say I've seen an equal amount of people saying that they're only shipped because they're like the two guys.
No, absolutely. The show is like, I don't know if this is weirder or less weird, but the show is like Loki and a female version of Loki are like in love or whatever.
Oh, wow.
Which is somehow, is it better or worse?
Wow, that's it's just worse. Like, it's like self-cessed, but in canon.
Yeah, that was like really what I could have done without.
And we transgendered it and we heterosexualed it.
We're transgendering heterosexuality. I mean, they are both trans, so.
Yeah, that's why they're transgendering it.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Oh, wait, the world snake is one of Loki's children?
There's a world snake?
Yeah. Jörg, is that what his name is?
I have no idea how to pronounce it. Jörg something. Jörg man.
What is a world snake? I'm so sorry.
The world snake, it wraps around the roots of the world tree. And when they punish Loki, they make him. He has to just like lay and drink the poison or whatever from the snake, right? Am I remembering this correctly?
I'm the wrong person.
Suck the poison straight out of the snake.
No, it's
fangs.
Like dripping. So wait, hold on. Are you guys like mythology gays at all?
Is this a no? I know nothing about
a little bit.
Okay, because it's like this is the only reason I know any of this is because
I'm the one who thought that Eurydice exploded like a creeper in outer space.
Yeah.
In outer space?
I thought that they were in outer space. I thought that all of the Greek gods were in outer space.
My favorite podcast moment still.
I know that today is your favorite podcast moment. It's the episode of Portrait of a Lady on Fire for Hoops for Your Context.
Erin, this is so funny. They didn't even... couldn't even like conceptualize space. Ancient Greeks.
I don't know why. I always assumed they were in space. It was the Portrait of a Lady on Fire episode. That movie focuses so heavily on the Orpheus and Eurydice story, but I had never heard of it.
Tell the story.
And I was not paying attention. I said to Aaron, I was like, they brought up Greek names. I tuned out. I blocked it out of my memory. Like, I literally was not paying attention at all. And so we get to the podcast and she's like, yeah, the Greek tale. And I was like, I wish I knew what that was about. And she was like, Aaron, they tell it in the movie. And I was like, I literally did not know.
Not to mention that's
and then
probably...
as she's retelling it to me, that's when I realized, I'm like, oh, that's the story about the guy who went to go get his wife or whatever, and then they had to travel through space, and if he looked back at her, she would explode.
Oh,
Aaron
my
was
God.
Like, that is not at all.
Aaron, sometimes I have to wonder what goes on in that little honey.
Your exact quote was when I'm like, they told the story in the movie. You were like, wait, I was not paying attention. Made me fucking, I think that's like a sound bite that just plays in my mind constantly. I was not paying attention.
Anytime anyone has tried to talk to Aaron about Greek mythology for the past 28, 29 years,
nobody's tried to talk
out
to
here
me about
trying
it.
To tell
that's
Aaron
the
about
thing.
The world snake, and Aaron's like <Do-do-do-do>. Thinking about space. Think about space and Minecraft.
I don't know, it's cool. Like, oh, I guess you don't really like fantasy stuff, right?
No, I've never really been interested in fantasy.
Well, you might if you listened to the stories. I feel like there's a lot of games.
I've heard them and I forgot them because I didn't like them.
There's a lot of, like, appropriately gay shit in mythology.
Yeah, like, there are some Greek gods that were gay, like Ares or whatever.
Mm-mm. I'm not gonna... not going to... even respond to that.
All right. Achilles?
Out of all of them?
Achilles is
Hieronymus
the right answer.
Or whatever?
For the
Achilles,
record.
Achilles, definitely a Good Greek job, god. Yep.
Is he not a Greek god?
He is gay, though.
He is gay.
Wait, for real, oh is god, he
don't
not
you
a Greek god?
Find out about
no, he's
Loki's
not.
Horse child that
Sleipnir,
has
right?
Eight legs. Yeah.
Yeah, he turned
he
into a mare.
The horse has eight legs. Yeah.
He turned into the mare?
Yeah, and then he got fucked by a horse, and then he gave birth to a horse child that he loved.
It has eight legs.
He loved
as
that
the
horse
mare?
Baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're the one, you said you knew Loki was trans.
Yeah,
I didn't know that
that's
he,
what you were
I'm
referencing.
Sorry. I didn't know that Loki became a mare.
This is the part where I go back.
I just thought he was trans.
To say... You might like a lot of mythology. There's a lot of weird stuff.
Wait. You were saying a mare.
A
like
mare,
a
lady
horse. I heard a mayor, like the mayor of a town.
Oh, no. No, what would that mean?
I don't what? Know. That's why I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Oh, no. We.
You know.
And then he became
the mayor. The mayor of Asgard, and then he birthed a horse. Oh, my God, you have to leave this in.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how you're going to edit it, but God help you.
So sorry.
Yeah, that makes
okay.
more sense.
Are we ending?
I did have two
Do
more.
Do we have anything else to say? Oh, okay.
I have two more fun right, facts. Let's... about
oh cool.
These. They're not really fun facts. These are just very specific details that I remember from this novel.
Okay.
Oh, I like that.
And the first is John or whatever, the guy, the creepy kid that lives with Sue and Mrs. Sexby and all them.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about him.
So
yeah, he was just some creepy guy that lived in their house.
Yes, he's creepy in the book, too. But in the book, he has a dog fur coat that he's obsessed with. And he's like, I'm so fucking cool because of my dog fur coat that I made out of strays. So we hate that guy.
Yeah.
I just remember being so grossed out by that concept.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you see some, like, very cute, like, wolfhound dogs in this movie.
Yeah, I did see, like, I was like, is that a Borzoi?
Not a baby. I looked like, I don't think it was a Borzoi, but it did kind of look like a Borzoi. It was too thick to be a Borzoi, though, but I think it was
like
a different
hound, type of. And then the other detail that I just always think about is when Maud goes to live with them, with Mrs. Sugsby, and is like kind of stuck there. Mrs. Sugsby is like trying to get her to dress like nice, and she's buying her new dresses and stuff. And one of them is green. And do you guys know this fact that in this era, green dye was made with arsenic? And so it's very specific in the book. They say like you have to make sure you don't sweat in it because basically if you were sweating in anything that was dyed with arsenic, like you would die from it. Because it would poison you through your skin.
Yeah.
But
Maud put Sue in that green dress and the fingers with the mini series.
No!
And she wouldn't let her take it off because she liked
she
how she looked at it.
Poisoning her.
She was poisoning
no.
her.
It's more of like the.
Also, oh my. Wow.
That like bright green. But
yeah, I assumed.
I just. These are just really.
Is Mrs. Sugsby trying to also murder. Or do away with Maud?
No. It's just supposed to, it's like nice. It's like luxury, right?
Oh, okay.
And I think, like, that kind of portion, too, they did have a lot of it, but, you know, Maude, like, did not want to be there, and Mrs. Suxby the whole time is like, but you're my daughter, we love each other, and we're gonna be rich, and we're gonna be together.
We're gonna hang out, we're gonna do girl things, mother-daughter stuff.
We're gonna be so rich.
Because we'll have $2 million.
They were gonna be so rich.
They were gonna be so rich. And you know who fucked it up? Mr. Rivers.
Fucking Rivers. Fuck that guy.
True.
What would have happened if they had just brought Maude to the house and just helped her escape? No marriage plot. No institution plot.
Right? Well, I think the point was...
Sue would have shared her $1 million with Mrs. Suxby. Yeah. She loved her.
Yeah, I think they... Mrs. Suxby also narrow-minded.
Yeah.
Don't you know that
your eye on the prize?
Your real daughter and your fake daughter are in love and they're gay?
Yeah.
And she realized and you could have two. She died for them.
Yeah, she did.
I know.
She sacrificed herself for her gay daughters.
And that, like, was so it's so morbid that the gallows are, like, right outside where they live. Oh my god. Also the Mrs. Suxby being like, You have to watch them hang me. What the fuck?
You have to watch them hang me.
Don't traumatize your daughter.
Watch that. What the heck?
Yeah. Yeah. I hope you guys liked it.
I really liked it.
I would definitely say read the book if you are so inclined. And let's all read Tipping the Velvet together.
Hell yeah.
Someday,
yeah. They're pretty dense books, but in, like, a really satisfying way.
But until then, we have to wait to do Killing Eve with you in a couple of weeks. And then also that divorce show. Ultimatum.
The divorce show.
The ultimatum.
So freaking ready. Oh my god.
Oh my goodness. Are you the one get, like, fully canceled, or was it just COVID?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it got canceled, which is so sad. I think that they made their own bed and, like, completely fucked shit up with how they handled that season. They got, like, a little bit of backlash, like, homophobic and transphobic backlash on social media, and then, like, completely moved the showtime to have it air at, like, 11 p.m. on, like, a Monday night or whatever, which meant it got horrible ratings.
Oh, yeah.
So I just don't think it's going to come back because of that. They also so mishandled the promotional materials that a lot of queer audiences didn't want to watch it because they thought it would be fetishistic, which it absolutely was not. Like, it was just trashy reality TV, you know,
which
not in a fetishistic way.
More of.
Yeah, which we need. I know. As a queer community, we need more trashy TV.
Yes, exactly.
More trash.
Every single
genre. I want to see people be messy.
Make it gay.
Yes. With the show Love is Blind that I'm just thinking of because apparently the same people who produced that are going to do the divorce show, Ultimatum. I was thinking about that, like, the two seasons that I know of were done with, like, straight couples. They have the guys on one side and the girls on the other, and then they're not able to see each other. They can just, like, talk through this, like, black screen. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, that would just, like, totally not work for lesbians because I feel like, I mean, maybe I should not, like, just speak for myself, but my, like, the women are hot and I like so many different kinds of women that, like, it's like, I just feel like I would see the person and be like, yeah, I think you're attractive and I also like your personality.
Okay. Consider we start with Love is Blind, but then it moves into the ultimatum.
Honestly, let's it would be like 90 Day the Single Life when they break up to get with another person.
Oh my god.
It would be like that, but then they like get back to we just need enough. It would be like a RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars cast. Bring in all the Love is Blind couples
all
that have
the worst
up.
People wait, they do that for like Bachelor in Paradise and stuff.
I have not watched Love is Blind season 2, but I did watch like a YouTube video on it, my favorite medium. And apparently in season 2, there's this guy who's just like completely and super horrible. Like,
yeah,
not even really trying to hide the fact that he like only cares about looks.
Oh my God.
Yeah, his like questions to the women are like, oh, I love buying clothes for people. Like, what size do you wear? Oof. Like, very clearly, like, trying to, like, see how they look. Or, like, do you like exercising? Like, do you eat a lot? Like, shit like that. And then when he matches with somebody, is, like, really shitty to her because he's like, I don't find her attractive. I see her as a sister. And he just gets totally roasted on the, like, reunion episode.
Wait, yeah. I have... Okay. Deservedly. I just have a recovered memory of this show that Nicole and I would watch, and I cannot remember the name of it, but it's a, I guess, a romance kind of reality show. But the concept is, close to Love is Blind, you see somebody's entire naked body except for their face. And then you can talk to them, but it's like, you're just like, oh my god, what is this show called? I don't remember, but it's like basically the opposite of Love is Blind.
Yeah. Oh my god, wasn't there another dating show where the contestants were just naked the whole time?
I think you're right.
Yes. Well, I this summer watched Naked and Afraid of Love, which so bad. It's on Discovery Plus.
That's a good title.
But yeah, it's like literally Naked and Afraid, but they put like 12 people together to see who would match up. And they started them off in pairs, and then they would slowly find more and more people out in the wilderness in a tropical island. There's lesbians, actually. Maybe we should do this for the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lesbian couple in Naked and Afraid of Love.
Naked and Afraid is like a survival type show, right?
Yes.
So in Naked and Afraid of Love, like, what is the... What's the...
They're surviving.
But they're
also dating.
Okay.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
They're all, like, all nasty. Right.
We can't... We've... At this, the last, like, 30 minutes of this has been Smith. Well,
let's
have to end.
Let's table this, but final thoughts. Aaron, we should do Naked and Afraid of Love sometime for the podcast.
Yeah, I will watch that.
Because there is a lesbian
couple.
We have to
now.
And they're, like, first time. Like, I've never dated a woman before. I just, like, really like her. Blah, blah, blah. It's very cute.
Oh, that is cute.
So cute.
Yeah. Wow. Final thoughts. I liked it.
Me too.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
If I was handed the Fingersmith miniseries or The Handmaiden and told to rewatch one of them, I think I would pick The Handmaiden. But that this has a lot of good qualities, and I really enjoyed it. I thought that it was a fun watch.
Yeah.
If anything, I think, like, my enjoyment of The Handmaiden was enhanced by watching this in some ways. So I think if you haven't seen one or the other, definitely watch them. And if you haven't seen both, like, definitely watch.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think they vary in ways that, like, both are good. Like,
yeah,
this is clearly a BBC period piece versus Handmaiden, which is, like, a very interesting retelling. The way they talk about, like, colonialism and swapping of races, I think, enhances a lot of elements. But, yeah.
Both are good.
Watching
Fingersmith, thank you for suggesting it.
Yeah, thanks for watching with me.
Thank you for being on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for talking about everything except the
We talked about everything this episode. Yeah.
God help Aaron, who has to edit this episode.
I know, I'm so sorry.
It's gonna be fun. It'll be fine. I'm gonna enjoy myself.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please follow us on Twitter at GaysGays. And there you can tweet with us. And also, if you like this podcast, please tell your friends about it. That really helps us out. Also, if you want to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, that also helps us out. Additionally, you can email us at aaron@gaysgays.com to send us thoughts, ideas, and recommendations. Many thanks to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Nude for allowing us to use their songs Look and Love and You Pretty Thing for our intro and our outro music. You can, and should, buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com. But you can also stream it on Spotify, but they will get one penny.
Not even.
Penny for you doing that. Next week, we're doing Pariah.
Yeah. Right? Oh my god, I'm so excited. Yeah, Pariah, we're gonna do it.
Woo!
I might rewatch Moonlight, too.
Ooh. Yeah. Just really amp up the feelings there.
Yeah, my goodness. Pariah hits you right in the feelings. I am very interested in rewatching Moonlight, too.
Whoa.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, I love you.
I love you.
I love you, too.
Right. And until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Aaron. Katie. Oops.
Oh, everybody
Hello?
Cut out for me.
Oops.
And we're gay. Thank you. Bye.